as we go through this passage this morning, it's not going to be like a couple other times that I preached where I've had this really nice, like, Star Wars illustration that kind of comes alongside of every point that I make, or there's not a super long story that I'm going over. This story is just a couple of verses long. And so what we're going to be doing is we're going to walk through this passage just verse by verse. We're going to be moving pretty quickly through most of it. It might even feel like I'm ignoring a part of it or just not really paying much attention to it. But I assure you there's a purpose to everything here, and we're going to get to it towards the end. And so to get started, in Mark 7, we're at the very end of this chapter. Let's talk about what we talked about last week. Pastor Jeff was here. Some of you weren't around for that. But I'm just curious, those of you that were here last week, what did we pull from Pastor Jeff's sermon? About the Phoenician woman, she asked Jesus to cast out the demon from her daughter. What did you guys pull from that? Anything? Anything? Who is Jesus? That's the question we're answering. We're asking, who is Jesus? So last week with Pastor Jeff, who is Jesus? Really? God. Jesus, okay, Jesus is God. I'm honest feedback. I want to know what you guys thought, because it was a really powerful sermon. I mean, there was a dozen or so of our attendants that came up front. They wanted prayer for this. This seemed like a pretty big sermon, pretty big deal. I'm sorry, healer, it was a big thing. Is that what you, John, your hand kind of... Yeah, the stuff that we don't deserve in the least. The woman says the scraps off the table. Even children give crumbs to the dogs under the table. And this woman says, well, I'm just a dog under the table. Jesus, give me some of your scraps. And that's what we have. Like John said, we can boldly approach. And that was kind of the big thing. We can boldly approach God and ask for things like healing. We can boldly approach the things that we don't deserve. God still gives us. So this week we're going to be looking at the story right after that. And I know there's a lot of stories in the Bible that it just goes through a long list of places that Jesus walked to, or maybe it was one of the disciples or apostles, somebody. There's just this long list of places they went. And so what I find helpful is to look at a map of it. So it's verse 31. It says, then Jesus left the vicinity of Tyre and went through Sidon, down to the Sea of Galilee and into the region of the Decapolis. So that vicinity of Tyre, with my laser pointer, here we go. This is where Jesus was with the Phoenician woman. And now the story says Jesus goes up north, comes all the way back down to the Sea of Galilee, the other side of it. And it seems like a lot of Jesus' time was spent around this area. And this place called the Decapolis was obviously regionally, it was large, but the name literally means 10 cities. This place wasn't a country, but it might as well have been. They even had their own military organized within all of their cities. And so this is where Jesus is right now, probably right near the sea in Decapolis. So go on to verse 32. There some people brought to him a man who was deaf and could hardly talk. And they begged Jesus to place his hand on them. So, this story starts out like a lot of other stories. Jesus walks into a town, and most of the time, the town comes running towards him because they know Jesus does some pretty cool things, including healing lepers, healing blind men. We kind of heard a summary of the story. We know that he's going to heal this deaf and mute man. So nothing crazy happening yet, at least nothing out of the ordinary for a story about Jesus. But then the first weird thing happens. After he took him aside, away from the crowd. Now, John kind of brought this up. This is something that seems a little bit odd. I mean, typically when Jesus does a miracle, it's in front of everybody. Everybody sees this, and it's something amazing, something that people kind of awe at. But we don't really know why right now Jesus is doing that. But all we can say right now, we're going to visit this later. All we need to know right now is Jesus wanted this to be a private event. It was for the lame man and the friends who brought him. We'll see that it wasn't just the man that he took aside. It was the man and his friends. So the second half of that verse, Jesus put his fingers into the man's ears. Then he spit and touched the man's tongue. Kyle, come here for a second. I forgot to bring some hand sanitizer up, but we'll manage here. He's not blind, Kyle.
I'm deaf, I can't see.
Well, I don't know if he was kneeling or not, but anyway, it probably, a lot of people kneeled in front of Jesus. So, there's a lot of weird things that happen in this story, but some of you can picture this in your head, but it means another thing when it happens. Jesus walks up to the man, sticks his fingers in his ears, and then he spits in his hand, and then I'm not actually going to. But then he touches the man's tongue. No, I'm not. Just go sit down. It's my left hand, not my right hand, so you can still shake my hand afterwards. All right. So it's such a weird picture. It doesn't make any sense. It's disgusting to us. Just the idea of sticking fingers in ears, like giving him a wet willy or something. Yeah, sure. And then it gets weirder because Jesus basically spits in his mouth. And so when you read through, this is one of the stories you read through and it's just question after question comes up. Why did Jesus take the man away? Why did Jesus stick his fingers in his ears? Why did Jesus spit in his mouth? It doesn't make much sense. But here, when you look, it's not really supposed to make a whole lot of sense to us. But see, in their culture, for some odd reason, spit was thought to have some healing properties to it. It was something that was pretty normal. Rabbis, they would use spit when they went to, they would use oil and spit were kind of the two big things to heal somebody. And so this man, he could see when he walked up, but he couldn't hear and he couldn't talk. So communication was probably a little bit challenging. And so Jesus, seeing as how smart he was, knew that in order to communicate well to this man, he couldn't talk to him. The American Sign Language hadn't caught on yet. And so there wasn't a whole lot left to use other than something that pretty much everybody in that area would recognize, and that spit. Jesus spit in his hand or spit in his mouth right away. This guy who was lame understood just by seeing visually, didn't have to hear anything, didn't need to talk. He understood just by seeing what Jesus' intentions were. Jesus wanted to heal this man. There was no doubt about that. I'm pretty sure the only reason why anybody would spit in their hand and then touch somebody's tongue at that day anyway would be to heal them. There wasn't a whole lot of mistaking that. And so we can move on from this understanding, okay, it's a little bit strange, but made sense to them. The man wanted to be healed. He understood now. And then here we go. After he took him aside away from the crowd, I'm looking at the wrong notes. Turn my page over. All right, he looked up to heaven with a deep sigh and said to him, I'm not good with my Greek or Aramaic, ephphatha, which means be opened. And so there's this word sigh that comes in. Something that I've learned is that, and you guys have probably seen this too, you read through the story and a lot of the Bible doesn't read like a novel. And by that I mean there's a lot of questions that you have that you want answered. Well, what did Jesus look like? What did this man look like? If this was like a modern day novel, you would have opened up the story and it would have said something along the lines of, so this man walked up to Jesus and he had tattered clothing. His left sleeve was torn down the side. His third button down was loose. Things that we're used to reading or seeing in movies. But when we start reading the Bible, authors don't give a rip about that stuff. They really don't. They believe that you understand what a leper kind of looks like. You understand what a man who can't walk looks like. They only include the important details. And so every word that these authors include is significant for some reason. And so it seems odd that they would include this verse about Jesus sighing. Why is this so significant? All right, so one of the few books that I still use from college, really big book, Strong's NASB Concordance, basically Bible Dictionary. All right, so the original language that was used here for sigh could mean any of these four things here. Could mean to complain, deep sigh, which is what we read, grief, and groan. Later, Paul, in a couple of his letters, these are just two examples, he uses the same original word, just translated as groan. This is just to give you an idea of why this is so important. So these verses say, not only so, but we ourselves groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for our adoption to sonship. Also, meanwhile, we groan, longing to be clothed instead with our heavenly dwelling. All right, so this is audience interaction here. What does groan mean there? What is the author trying to imply here about this word groan in the context that it's in? What do you got? Longful. There's eagerness. They're ready for something. There's expectation. And so we go back to this verse we're on, verse 34. And it says, he looked up to heaven and with a deep sigh said to him. So he's looking up to heaven. You guys might remember the banner that we had up here not too long ago. Can't really see this battery's dying. It's okay. The banner that was up here. What was the verse that was up here before this banner? Yes. Yeah. So there's kind of quietly in the back there. Thank you. Yeah. It's we look up to the heavens, we look up to the mountains, we look up and we know where our help comes from. Jesus right here demonstrating this, he looked up to heaven and with a deep sigh, with a groan, expectation, he looked up to God expecting something to happen. And he says, be opened. So, and this is one of those, there's a couple of places in these verses where we could stop and we could pull application straight from this and we could end and it would be great. We could easily stop here and talk about how, well, do we talk to God with expectation? Do we come to him with requests? Do we say this and we expect it to happen? Jesus says, if you have the faith of a mustard seed, you can move mountains. So do we approach God asking him and expecting him to give us an answer, expecting something to happen from that? But we're not going to sit there. We're going to keep going. Verse 35. At this, the man's ears were opened, his tongue was loosened, and he began to speak plainly. All right, who here is surprised at the result of this? So you might be, but it seems it's pretty typical for a Jesus story. Walks into town, everybody comes up, says, Jesus, heal me. And he says, okay, as long as they have faith. There was a time when he went somewhere and they didn't have, Jesus says that they didn't have any faith. He was disappointed. He was actually angered by it. And he says, and the author says, he did only a few miracles. He just healed a few people. I'm barely paraphrasing that. Just healed a few people. And so you can imagine when he goes into a town where people have faith, where people actually trust him, the amazing things that happen. This is just one of those things. New Testament says that if we were to have an account of everything that Jesus did, there wouldn't be enough room on the pages in order to do that. The book would be too big. There would be too many volumes. We couldn't contain all that information. Here's just one example. He heals a man. And again, just like last week, we could stop here and talk about how Jesus is our healer. Absolutely he is. We're asking that question, who do you say that I am? So we can read this. How can you not read this and be like, man, Jesus is pretty cool. He didn't heal this man of just one thing. He healed this man of two separate diseases. But we're going to keep going. Verse 36, and this is like the biggest question for me. Jesus commanded them not to tell anyone, but the more he did so, the more they kept talking about it. And so this isn't the only time this happens. There's a couple of times I feel like that Jesus heals somebody and then says, no, don't go tell anyone. Or maybe he says, just go to the temple and make yourself clean there. He gives them a strict order that's kind of the opposite of going out and telling everybody. And so something, oddly enough, John, when you were just kind of summarizing that story for all of them, something kind of struck me there. The way that you said, so Jesus told him not to tell anybody, but he just got done healing him. He just got done healing his deafness. He could hear. He could speak again. But don't go tell anybody about it. Seems kind of weird. But here at the same time, don't you think the evidence kind of speaks for itself? Quite literally? Yeah, that wasn't an intentional pun. It struck me back here. Seriously, so the healing that we get or the things that God does in our life, like, yeah, we're supposed to go out and tell people about what he's done. I mean, that seems kind of silly not to do that. But at the same time, if Jesus does something great in your life, odds are the evidence is going to speak for itself. When you have a friend or coworker, somebody you know that maybe they finally make Jesus their Lord, and you start seeing the changes in their life. Typically, we might identify those as the fruit of the Spirit. you're going to see the evidence change. Yeah, they're probably going to go and tell, especially if they know that you're a Christian. They're going to go, man, I'm a Christian too. And they're really excited. But at the same time, like, yeah, that's great. But now all of a sudden, over time, you're going to start seeing these changes. And so Jesus told this man not to tell anybody. But the question still there, why? There's a lot of why. As I'm reading, these are questions that I have. As I was reading through this, why? There's lots of whys in this story, more so than I think I'm used to reading. So why did Jesus tell them not to tell anyone? Yes, the evidence speaks for itself, but I think what it comes down to, and this is after reading from a couple of different authors, a couple of different people who are much smarter than me, is a lot of them seem to agree that it's the fact that Jesus was here to establish a spiritual kingdom and not a physical kingdom. Yes, everywhere that Jesus went, he healed people. And that was probably the biggest part of his ministry, as far as things being outward, things that people can see. But I don't know if you guys know this or not, but there's a couple of times where the crowds almost literally took Jesus and wanted to make him their new king, like physical king right there, and overthrow the Roman government, because Jesus' name literally means deliverer, savior. And so you have this guy walking through town, healing all these people, casting out demons. He happened to be called deliverer. You're probably going to be thinking the same thing. Man, this guy can overthrow Caesar. We can take over. We can kick Rome out of here. We can go back and reestablish our theocracy. And Jesus, no, that's not at all what he wanted. What did Jesus want to do? I'll hear from you guys. What did Jesus want to do? Yeah, I mean, the answer might be right on the screen, but establish a spiritual kingdom. So what does that mean? What does it mean that he wanted to establish a spiritual kingdom? What do you guys got? I know this is very odd for some of you. To fill heaven, yes, absolutely. Yeah, and so, but here's the thing. Jesus is trying to take heaven and bring it down to earth. That's what Jesus is doing. Everywhere that Jesus went, you can imagine the world. It's hard to imagine this, I know, but the world is dark. But you can imagine literally a dark planet. Everywhere that Jesus goes, there's a little bit of light. And then he walks up, he heals somebody, and they start following him. Jesus walks up to Vin, and he heals Vin. All of a sudden, Jesus is still light. Now Vin is light. And he walks around. All the towns that he goes to, he goes around, he heals people, he saves them. And now this light starts spreading. That's the spiritual kingdom that Jesus wanted to establish. And so we go on here. So Jesus didn't want him to go tell anyone because he was afraid that people would misunderstand what he was doing. So the evidence is going to speak for itself here. But if this guy were to go around and start shouting, deliverer healed me, there's a good chance, like in a couple other instances, the crowd is going to start thinking more and more, man, we can take this guy and we can overthrow the Roman government. That is the last thing that Jesus wanted to do there. He knew that if something like that were to happen, his crucifixion would have been for a whole nother reason. And so the last verse, I know it feels like we kind of like zoomed through that, but this is where I kind of want to sit. People were overwhelmed with amazement. He's done everything well, they said. He even makes the deaf hear and the mute speak. So again, we can sit here. Jesus is my healer. But that's not what I want to focus in on. Again, remember, every word that the authors use is significant. So why would verse 37 start with, the people were overwhelmed with amazement? And so that is where we're going to kind of leave this right now. We're going to keep talking about this, but we're not going to go any further. This is what I want to talk about. When was the last time that you were overwhelmed with amazement at God? Overwhelmed means to bury. I love this. I like this definition a lot. Bury and drown beneath a huge mass. And amazement is a feeling of great surprise or wonder. So the people were drowned beneath a huge mass of great surprise and wonder. When's the last time that you were overwhelmed with amazement at God? Thursday night at worship team practice, Anna was talking about her vacation. Believe it or not, she really enjoyed that cruise. But Anna, I'm putting you on the spot here. Do you remember what you told us about when we were practicing Indescribable? What did you tell us about that song and why you thought about it? Underwater while you were snorkeling?
Yeah, something. I started singing that song, and all the guys came.
Trying to imagine how that all sounded. Thanks. So, and I thought of a few others. I'm sure Ron and Crystal Bolton, whenever you guys are doing your night wonders, staring up at the sky, you got the telescope. I mean, how often aren't you amazed at what's up there? And there's a lot of things like, yeah, we can walk outside and we can be amazed that all these things are created. I feel like the easiest thing that we can be amazed at is the creation itself, which, don't be wrong, it's pretty amazing. But how many other things can we be amazed at? So these people in the story, they weren't amazed at what God created. They were amazed that Jesus was healing everybody. And it wasn't just this one specific instance that they appear to be amazed at. Because they say that he's done everything well. So they're recounting everything that Jesus has done for the past year or two, all of the towns that he's been to, all of the cities, all the villages, everywhere that he went, something amazing has happened. And so now I'm asking you guys, what has God done that has overwhelmed you with amazement? Go ahead. Birth of a child. So I hear that a lot. What do you got? Okay, so overwhelmed. You can get overwhelmed with a lot of stress, a lot of things going on. What about anybody else? When were you overwhelmed with amazement at God, Vin?
I'm just amazed on how well my relationship with my dad has been. We've been growing closer.
You and your dad have been through a whole lot.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it is pretty amazing to see what that relationship has grown to look like.
I thank God for that almost every single day.
Yeah. Yeah, Kyle.
I didn't used to go to church at all. I didn't grow up in the church. I used to be a rather disgusting person in my opinion. I have friends now. I have three families now. With Julia's family and my church family. I have friends. I have a support group now. I didn't have any of this growing up. And it all happened after I came to call Jesus my Lord.
Applause. What about from this side? What has amazed you? What has overwhelmed you with amazement about God? I'm down on the floor now. Stoked. Yeah. Yeah, I think we've all seen both of your grandkids grow a lot over the past few years. What else? What have you been overwhelmed? What have you been buried, drowned in? All the way. The new life that God's given you. Yeah. Anything else? Deneen. Peace. Okay, we got another one back here. The other one. Go ahead. Yeah, how God made everybody. Yeah, absolutely. So, When was the last time that you just sat, stood, or laid down just being overwhelmed with amazement at God? And so that question that we have, who do you say that I am? We could, and I struggled answering this question after reading this. A couple reasons. One, it's not grammatically correct to answer that question with "he's amazing," because it's not "what do you say that I am," it's "who do you say that I am?" And I mean, that's started out being kind of that, but then it forced me to kind of sit down and really think about that. And now I thought, well, if we're asking the question, why do you believe that Jesus is so amazing? I feel like a lot of you are going to have some different answers to that. And so I was talking with Cindy Arnold about this last week and asking her that question. And she came up with when her daughter was really sick. And she went going through that whole process, you know, the doctors and then the healing that came afterwards. So to her, Jesus is her healer. I mean, he's my healer as well. But that was what stood out as she read through this story. And so maybe over here we might hear that Jesus is my creator. But what about you guys? Who do you say that Jesus is? What amazes you about him so much that he has become just that? It's great. Yeah. So then who does that, and this is why this question is so hard to answer. Then who is Jesus then to you? Savior. Yeah. I know I thought through this and was thinking, he's my forgiver. It's kind of an odd, I don't know if I've ever used that word in that way before, but he forgives me every time I do something really stupid. He has a lot of love. Jesus, how about that old 90s classic, Jesus is the lover of my soul. Yeah. All right. So, today let's walk away from this thinking about what is so overwhelmingly amazing about Jesus and answering that question, who do you say that he is? Who do you say that I am? Jesus is asking you.